This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in to the Lions 24/7 podcast. This is Tyler Donahue. Sean Fitz, as we mentioned last episode, is on vacation with his family. Hope he's enjoying that. Quite frankly, he hasn't been able to completely disengage, as you can imagine, based on how this week has gone. The concerns about coronavirus have rocked the sports world, and Happy Valley, no exception. At this stage, based on what we know, and let me preface this by saying we're coming to you here on a Friday morning. This is the third time I have re-recorded this intro to the podcast because the updates have been so swift and so changing. But as things stand right now, Penn State Pro Day is off the books. That was scheduled for next Tuesday. NFL scouts coming to evaluate the draft eligible members of this Nittany Lions team. Always something we look forward to. And the big one, Wednesday, was supposed to be the first of 15 Penn State spring practices. As of right now, that will not take place. And the cancellation of the blue-white game, an annual event last year, drew 61,000 to Beaver Stadium. That was a top five turnout in all of college football. For now, that has been pushed aside due to the concerns about coronavirus. College kids supposed to be coming back here to campus next week. That's not happening. Online classes right now taking precedent for Penn State across the institution. And if you have followed news coverage, I'm guessing you have, you are well aware that this is not just restricted to the Big Ten or Penn State. This is across college athletics, the NCAA tournament, March Madness, the brackets that we all love. That will not happen this year. And your heart goes out to the Penn State basketball program on the verge of their first appearance in 9 years. And coming from somebody whose alma mater was about to see their first March Madness appearance in more than two decades, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks. It sucks. And Lamar Stevens specifically, 7 points away from breaking Penn State's all-time scoring record. It was a conversation that we had with Mark Brennan on our last episode here in the Lions 24/7 podcast. He's going to stay 7 points away from breaking that record. It looked like an absolute no-brainer. He would surpass the all-time mark, but no Big Ten tournament, no NCAA tournament, and all of a sudden we're left with the end of a basketball season that is one for the record books for all the wrong reasons. And we try to keep perspective here and what sports means to us in America and globally, and you're seeing soccer in Europe go to the standstill in professional sports, whether it's baseball, hockey, basketball. We'll see where football stands down the line. Everything's on pause right now, and it's remarkable. But we're going to keep moving forward here on the Lions 24/7 podcast, on Lions247.com. Clearly, we're going to need to evaluate what we're going to bring you as far as reporting. I can tell you I've got a long list of stories I've been trying to get to, and I've probably been compiling that list for about 2 or 3 years right now. So maybe time to do some of those longer stories. Of course, whenever we get the updates and breaking news regarding coronavirus and how it is impacting life in the athletic spectrum, specifically at Penn State, we'll bring it to you. Wait and see mode right now. That goes for reporters, that goes for the coaches, the athletes, and we will see. But it is a nice time for distraction. After all, that is what sports present to us on a daily basis, or at least up until now they did. And what better distraction than to bring on a great guest here onto the show? This was already planned with Sean being on vacation. We have tapped into our South Jersey resources. Always nice to double up on your dosage of South Jersey here on the show. When I was 24 years old, I was covering local sports in Southern New Jersey for an ESPN radio affiliate. Southern Regional Junior Mike Gesicki was one of my first guests on that show back in winter of 2013. 7 years later, Mike, you're 24. You're making a little bit more money in your profession than I was back in the day, but not much more, just a little bit. It's always a pleasure. Like I said, it's kind of a reunion tour for us. We had a lot of these before we got to Penn State. Really glad to get back and kind of get a nice conversation with you here with Sean gone.
It's fun to be back on the show. Get to reminisce a little bit back to, our South Jersey roots. And now, talking today, many years later. And so it'll be an exciting show and a lot of good topics. So let's get rolling.
Well, everybody's talking right now, speaking of topics, about one, the NFL draft. Guys like Yetur Gross-Matos and KJ Hamler are focal points here in Happy Valley. NFL free agency is a huge issue. For you, those two things aren't going to impact you right now in this offseason. Year number three, Miami Dolphins. I don't know if that sounds crazy to you or if you feel like you've already been in for that long. What is this stage of the calendar like for a guy like you in your shoes as you wait to take that next step and get back to South Florida?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, once the season ended, I took a couple weeks just to, it's a long year. So you try to get your body back and, get healthy. And kind of get rejuvenated for off-season training, and then just got right back into it, working out, lifting, running, some football field work, catching, all that kind of stuff to prepare myself for when OTAs start right in about the middle of April, and that goes for about 8 weeks. So the NFL off-season is different, man, because it's all up to you, and it's, you're kind of on your own based off how you want to attack it. And I think everybody kind of has their own routine, but I'm kind of sticking to mine.
You mentioned the word attack. I mean, that's, you got to attack the season, attack these camps, attack this, that. When you get that little decompression right after the season ends and you can relax, how do you decompress? How do you exhale a little bit? What do you kind of like to do to let go?
Honestly, just kind of coming back home, obviously, like you said, seeing people that, you're not really able to see a ton during the season. Catch up, all that kind of stuff. And then, just relaxing. But honestly, it kind of gets a little boring just, based off, my whole life, I've always kind of been on the go. In high school, I was going from sport to sport to sport. And then in college, there was always, where during the season there was, obviously games, practices, and then the off season there was winter workouts and spring ball and all that kind of stuff. So, when you don't have a schedule to kind of, lead your day and, tell you what to do and when to do it, you kind of get bored. And like I told myself to take, I think it was 3 weeks once the season ended to just kind of, relax and get my body back. And I was sitting there after a couple of days and I was like, man, I'm bored. So, I mean, it's definitely an interesting process, but it's definitely worth it.
Now, Mike, you got a big year coming ahead for the NFL, but if we could look in the rearview mirror a little bit, you just referenced in high school, there was no downtime. You were all-state performer on the basketball court, all-star volleyball player, state championships, and obviously the dunk contest in basketball, too, at the state level. You won that. And then football, obviously people know you for football here, and I think people are pretty well acclimated with your history as a multi-sport athlete. But as you get further away from that experience, what stands out to you as you're assess your high school career, and is there another sport, whether it's basketball or volleyball, where you think you could have taken it to a very far level?
So sports has always been something that's driven my life, and so growing up it was always basketball, and then I got into middle school and picked up football, and then got into high school and picked up volleyball. So I was always doing something. I was either on a field or I was in a gym somewhere at all times. And I think, that's kind of helped, progress me into, the athlete and, the football player that I am today. And then obviously, going to Penn State and playing football. But, I think I could have, ultimately played, those sports, volleyball and basketball at the collegiate level as well. I took a visit to, a couple, like Bucknell for basketball, and, ended up, hearing from, the Penn State, men's volleyball team. When I was in high school. So, I mean, those opportunities were there, but I knew that, football, I kind of just started to scratch the surface on, at that time in my high school career. So I kind of knew, where the game was going and, where the opportunities lied ahead for me. And so I was kind of excited to explore that aspect of my journey in terms of football.
And clearly picking the right path, ultimately leading you to where you are today, your destination. And I spent a lot of time on my radio show when you would join me trying to get you to talk about Rutgers recruiting you. And I'm mentioning that because Sean usually makes fun of me for the Rutgers stuff on this show, and he's not around, so I'll do it to myself here. I'm glad you got a kick out of that still after all these years. At the end of the day, though, you committed to Bill O'Brien's Penn State Nittany Lions, and I know for you, I distinctly remember you saying no to Urban Meyer in Ohio State was the most difficult part of the process. Can you look back to what happened after that? James Franklin comes in, takes over the program in January, about a month before that signing day. This is not when there was an early signing period. That would have really made things messy, I guess, with the coaching transition. Did you ever consider poking your head around elsewhere with Penn State? Did James Franklin have to really hit a home run with you on those first couple conversations to prevent you from doing so?
When I committed to Penn State, I did commit to Penn State, for, Coach O'Brien and for, the football aspect of it. But there was a lot more that I committed to Penn State for than just that. So when, Coach O'Brien did leave, I was still, committed to Penn State for more than just, the football program. I had already built a couple of relationships there with guys on the team, and just kind of, I liked, the campus. I liked, the thought of, being, 4 hours away from home and, the academic aspect of it, just everything. So when Coach O'Brien left, it was, disappointing as a recruit at that time. And then, Coach Franklin came in, and you know, I had a previous relationship with him when he was at Vanderbilt. He offered me a scholarship as well. So, I knew him. I knew the staff. They came to one of my basketball games and, ended up coming to my house and all that kind of stuff. So, they were very easy to get along with. They were great guys, great coaches, and, just kind of kept that relationship going. And, ultimately, I think Ohio State ended up sending their tight end coach out to one of my basketball games during that process when O'Brien left, and then in between that signing period. I talked to him and that kind of stuff. But, I was, 100% committed to Penn State. And, like you said, telling Urban Meyer no, months before that, it was a difficult process just because, you build relationships throughout the recruiting process, you get close with people. Obviously, Coach Meyer had a ton of success throughout his coaching career. And it was kind of funny. I saw him at Big Ten Media Day my senior year. And, I was actually had like a quick, 30-second conversation with him. But, he's just asking, how's my family doing? How's everything going? Congrats on, a couple, successful seasons, all that kind of stuff. So it's just kind of cool to kind of see how everything kind of worked out and, looking back on it.
And your third year at Penn State, obviously the big win at against Ohio State in the whiteout conditions is viewed as a turning point for the program. Your first couple years on campus, it's easy to forget now considering where the program is, but 14 wins, 12 losses, you're trying to find your way at the position, making a big transition from the kind of athlete you were in high school to being a Big Ten tight end. How kind of different was Penn State when you were going through the exit door after the 2017 season versus when you came in 2014 when you kind of assessed the program from start to finish during your career?
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's a lot easier for kids to, look at Penn State today and commit to Penn State than it was, during that time when, the class before mine did and, when my class committed there. It was a whole different time period based off of, all the sanctions and, the adversity that Penn State was going through as a university and as a football program. And, there wasn't, elite high level success at that time. We were, winning the games, some of the games that we were supposed to, but there wasn't, those, marquee wins besides, the one that I was at for my official visit was that the 4-overtime Michigan whiteout game, which was, electric. And I mean, that was great. But, I think kind of looking at the transformation of Penn State over those past couple seasons and over, the course of my career and, the last couple of years after that, it's definitely been exciting to see that kind of transpire. But like you said, it wasn't easy. When I first got to Penn State, my first year played a little bit, kind of here and there. My second year ended up winning the starting job and then ultimately losing the starting job, based off, my performance on the field and, just not kind of living up to those expectations and making the plays that, I knew I was capable of. Everybody kind of knew I was capable of. And then, fighting through that, getting better, learning from adversity, and then having those last 2 years, know, win the Big Ten championship, you know, back-to-back 11-win seasons, back-to-back, you know, New Year's Six Bowls, you know, Fiesta Bowl champion, just, you know, all the kind of stuff that that you look at Penn State today and you think of, you know, right now, you know, they're the defending Cotton Bowl champions, you know, stuff like that where Penn State should be talked about in terms of college football.
You mentioned the adversity you went through and then where you finished. You finished on top of the Penn State leaderboard among tight ends for career catches, 129 for career receiving yards, 1481, and for tight end touchdown receptions. But, Mike, it's now a tie atop the leaderboard for touchdown catches. Pat Freiermuth got you last year. He didn't waste much time, did he?
No, man. They that offense, you know, I think it's, you know, started in 2016 when Coach Moorhead got there. And I think you kind of saw it, you know, start with, you know, myself in that tight end position. And now it's, you know, keeping that same system with, you know, Coach Ronnie for those 2 years after I left when he became the OC. You know, the tight end is definitely, you know, a huge part of that red zone offense. And there's definitely been a lot of success in the past couple of years with guys getting in the end zone. I mean, even, you know, my senior year, you know, we had, you know, Nick Bauer score a touchdown. We had Tom Panko score a touchdown. And then obviously I had mine. Tommy Stevens would go in at tight end. He would score touchdowns. And then, you know, the last 2 years, you know, Pat's obviously, you know, done a tremendous job and Bowers did a great job. So I think that, you know, that position as a whole in terms of, you know, red zone productivity has done a really good job.
And it's one they have recruited very well, continuing to bring in blue chip talent there. Obviously, you have to get it done on campus, but the accolades have been there for the guys they are signing. That went for Pat a couple of years ago. I know you didn't cross paths as a student athlete with Pat Freiermuth, but I'm imagining that you two have been engaged to some degree over the last couple of years. What's your impression of him as a player? He's become a leader. I know you prided yourself on being a leader in that locker room at Penn State. He has kind of ascended to that role. He was a captain as a sophomore. What stands out about him in that tight end room?
Yeah, you know, from the games that, you know, I've been able to watch, you know, obviously, you know, he plays physical. He plays, you know, he's making plays, whether it's in the running game, whether it's in the passing game, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, obviously, you know, continue to, you know, get better and grow in that aspect for him going into year three. But, you know, everything that I've heard about him, you know, he's a really hard worker, has kind of earned what he's been able to on that everybody sees on Saturdays. And, you know, super excited for him and his future. You know, who knows, you know, what's going to happen in terms of how long he stays at Penn State. But for sure is, you know, making his name known in, you know, Nittany Lion history.
Now, Mike, you mentioned when you get a chance to watch Penn State games. How often is that? Are you able to make time on most Saturdays to do so? Is it a challenge during the season because you've got, obviously, your obligations going on with the Miami Dolphins? And what is it like watching them from the outside looking in after being such a central figure in the James Franklin era for those 4 years?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have meetings and stuff on Saturdays and then, you know, during the day. So, I mean, the best time for me to catch a Penn State game is probably is when they play at noon, because we get done around that time. And then we kind of got to report back around like 6:30-ish. So if they have a late game, it's kind of tough to see the whole thing. But it is, you know, it's cool to kind of go back and watch those guys and, you know, just watch how the program is and, you know, seeing the success that, you know, they've been able to, you know, last, you know, the past couple of years. So it's been exciting. It's been cool. And, you know, it's always, you know, you're always, you know, talking trash in the locker room with other guys that went to other Big Ten schools or any other schools that they're playing. So it's funny, man. It's cool. And it's super, you know, enjoyable as a, you know, a Penn State guy.
When you look across the pros right now, you're obviously a guy on the rise. Saquon Barkley came in red hot and is one of the more marketable young athletes in America at this point. Chris Godwin put on a show last year with the Buccaneers. The list goes on and on with the NFL presence. We always hear you when you're on campus, family within the locker room, family when you're on campus. You're out on your own. You're all pursuing different professional aspirations, endorsement deals, all the other things that are involved in your lives now. But how much does that network stay intact the further you get away from campus?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, all of those guys that, you know, I played with and even the guys that I didn't play with, but that were still, you know, Penn State guys. I mean, when I got drafted to the Dolphins, you know, Cam Wake was there and that was a guy that was at Penn State 10 years before me. And, you know, we were still, you know, being able to have those conversations about campus, about the program, about, you know, big wins and all that kind of stuff. So it's cool to kind of see that network and see that brotherhood, you know, move on to the next level in the NFL. You know, I got a couple jerseys from, you know, I got a jersey from Chris. I got a jersey from Miles, Saquon, Grant. You know, there's Troy Apke. You know, I've been able to, you know, kind of, you know, talk to guys after games, you know, during games, all that kind of stuff. So it's cool. It's definitely, you know, a fun experience to be a part of, and definitely, you know, the best, you know, brotherhood, you know, Penn State guys, you know, going on in the NFL. That's definitely a good one to be a part of.
There's a lot of people right now who say they knew Saquon back when, but you really did know Saquon when he showed up with his bags packed as a freshman to check in as a student athlete at Penn State. And now here he is, you know, all over the television with different advertisements. Can you kind of give us some insight into maybe how he changed that culture when we went up, when we talked about the period of transition for Penn State to where it is now? Because something interesting came up just last week. We were in the weight room with Dwight Gault. I know you have a lot of respect for Coach Gault and what he does, but he told us that he still feels like Saquon's presence from 2-3 years ago now sustains in the running back room, resonates in the way guys handle themselves, conduct themselves. I mean, his name's all over that weightlifting leaderboard still, but is there something to be said about that, that he's left campus a couple of years ago and that still seems to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for him and, you know, the trait that, you know, has, you know, just kind of, you know, stuck around in that locker room and that weight room and that facility is just that that competitive nature. You know, he was always trying to get better. He was always trying to compete and kind of bring other guys along with him. You know, I mean, there's tons of videos of him, you know, doing a whole bunch of crazy stuff in the weight room that everybody's seen. And then obviously all that kind of, you know, transforms into the plays that he makes. And then on Saturdays and now on Sundays. So, you know, you can't really say enough, you know, good things about, you know, him, you know, when he was, you know, competing and, you know, as a football player and as a guy. So, you know, I'll always, you know, be, you know, super, you know, supportive of him and happy for him and all the success that, you know, he's had and will continue to have during his career.
You two came in as rookies together and you were huge stars on the NFL Combine out in Indianapolis. You put up some incredible numbers for the tight end position, Mike. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but can you take us in the mindset of these guys like KJ and Yitor and John Reed and Cam Brown and Robert Windsor and Steven Gonzalez? And I know I could name other players who are trying to impress NFL scouts. What's running through your mind at that point? You know, before you actually get to test out and ball out in front of the scouts, is it anxiety? Is there any fear? Is it just a sense of adrenaline?
You know, in terms of, you know, the combine or pro day, just those, you know, that testing specifically, that was something that I've been, you know, waiting for my whole life. You know, just because of, you know, what I was, you know, the numbers I was putting up, you know, throughout my, you know, high school and college career, you know, I knew kind of what I was capable of. And, you know, obviously, you know, you're going to get nervous. You're going to think about what's at stake and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I mean, you're going to run as fast as you run. You're going to jump as high as you can jump, you know, like, all those things are already determined from, you know, how hard you worked and, you know, the technique that you learned over the past couple of months training and, you know, your God-given your ability and talent, just all that kind of stuff. So that kind of stuff, it's really not, you know, very overly nerve-wracking just because, you know, like I said, you know, it's already, you know, kind of set, you know, where how you're going to perform. And then, you know, the on-the-field drills, you got to go out and do, you know, what you know you're capable of doing. You know, you've already put, you know, a lot of good stuff on film and, you know, obviously or else you wouldn't be where you are and, you know, competing for what you're competing for. So, you know, to those guys that are, you know, doing that and to, you know, going out and, you know, running their 40s and, you know, jumping their verticals and bench pressing and doing their on the field drills. I mean, the only, you know, advice that you would give them is just go do what you know you can do, because at the end of the day, man, that's kind of, you know, what you're trying to, you know, give across to these coaches. To show them, you know, that what they're getting in you is going to be, you know, a very, you know, important part to their organization, help them win football games and overall, you know, become a better organization.
KJ Hamler's a pretty fascinating figure because he took that red shirt in 2017 and then immediately from his first game in the lineup played a huge role against Appalachian State and went forward the next two seasons as the receptions leader for Penn State, a guy that could do just about anything with the ball at any given point. Kind of took the mantle from Saquon as the most exciting player within that offense, I think you could argue, in a lot of points. But Mike, did you see flashes on the practice field while he was recovering from a knee injury at coming out of high school? But was it pretty obvious, even while we weren't seeing him in 2017, that he was going to be a special player?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you can't teach, you know, speed and quickness and, you know, explosiveness like he has. So, you know, I wish I could do some of the things that he can do with the ball in his hands, you know, in terms of making people miss and outrunning guys and, you know, just kind of making plays with the ball in your hands. So, I think that was kind of something that was evident from the first day he kind of got there and was able to, you know, be 100% healthy and run around and, you know, go out there and make plays. So I think that's, you know, his biggest trait. You know, you see guys, you know, making a, you know, a living off of, you know, their explosiveness, their speed, their quickness, and, you know, how fast they are. And so I think that he's kind of a guy that's going to, you know, fit into that trait where, you know, if you play man-to-man coverage on him, you know, you better be ready to get out of your back pedal and go run him down because he's definitely a guy that'll run right by you.
All this conversation leading up to the NFL draft next month, take us into your head. You sound like you were a cool customer when it came to the combine testing, but does all that coolness go out the window when you're waiting for your name to be called? You go to bed after that first round, you're kind of hoping you're going to have good news at the start of the second. You wait 10 picks and the Miami Dolphins take you. How nerve-wracking is that entire wait? And then how quickly does it go from that to getting a phone call and saying, let's get to work, we need it down here?
It's definitely an exciting and also, you know, very interesting experience. You know, you've put in so much work and, you know, so much time and effort and commitment to kind of get to that point and something you dream about for so long. And, you know, but it's once, you know, that clock starts, you know, you have no control over where you're going to get drafted. You know, you have no control on when your phone's going to ring or anything like that. So you just kind of just got to be very calm and patient. You know, obviously, you know, Saquon, you know, he waited about 8 minutes and then, you know, his phone rang, you know, and then, you know, I was the next guy from Penn State to, you know, hear my phone ring. And it wasn't for, you know, until the next day, you know, there was buzz where, you know, I could have, you know, gotten picked here or there on day one, but, you know, things happened in the draft and, you know, I ended up where I ended up and, you know, when my phone rang, and it said Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you know, my family, you know, was there, my girlfriend was there, my friends were there, you know, everybody that, you know, I truly, you know, cared about and wanted to share that moment with, they were all there. So it was a really cool experience. It was something that, you know, I'll remember forever. And I ended up in, you know, in a great spot with, you know, a phenomenal organization and has, you know, been able to, you know, grow and develop into, you know, a player that I'm proud to be right now and somebody, you know, that I'm going to continue to, you know, strive, you know, be better and better each and every day for, you know, next season and many seasons to move forward.
And there are worse workplaces than South Florida, that's to be sure. Now, you've undergone, you know, in just a short time, you know, a lot. You saw organizational leadership change at the coaching position. You've seen quarterback changes, and you've also experienced quite a leap. Year number one for you. Can you talk about what it's like to make that jump? You can be the best of the best in the Big Ten at your position. Then you go to the NFL. I have to imagine that's a humbling experience as a rookie. And then you really started to find your groove last year. 5 touchdowns by the end of it, 570 receiving yards. Came on strong. Big touchdown against the New England Patriots on the road where they don't lose. And it totally changed the complexion of the playoffs. And you were helping, you know, at the center of this resurgence for the Miami Dolphins. Can you sum up these first couple of years? Years, the highs and lows and where you're coming out the other end for year three?
You know, my first year in Miami was a learning experience and it was, you know, I had to develop and I had to, you know, do some, you know, play away a style that, you know, I wasn't asked to play, you know, previously in terms of, you know, just kind of being like a true, you know, hand in the dirt tight end, you know, having to, you know, pass protect and run block and do all that kind of stuff rather than, you know, just make the plays that, you know, everybody's the reason, you know, that, you know, one of the reasons that I was, you know, drafted for, you know, mainly was for the plays I was making in the passing game in college and that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, learning and going through that part of my career in my first year in Miami, I think it was similar, you know, kind of how, you know, my kind of Penn State career went. It wasn't, easy in the beginning. It wasn't, exactly how I envisioned it or how anybody envisioned it. But, at the end of the day, I think that those kind of experiences are what, drives the success and, those, the bigger moments that, I was able to see later in my career at Penn State. And then, my second year in Miami, we got a new, coaching staff and, a lot of, new quarterback, new changes, a lot of new stuff, and just kind of being able to adapt with all the change and, just be ready to, make plays and, make the most of your opportunities when they come. I think that's the biggest thing about, the NFL in general is, you don't know how many opportunities you're going to have, or you don't know when your opportunity is going to come, but when it does, when that opportunity does present itself, you don't know how many opportunities you're going to get to make the most of it. So I think, doing that, in my second year and, making some plays and kind of get my name out there, I think that was something that, was exciting.
Last couple games here, I got the stats in front of me. Six catches against the Bengals for 82 yards, two touchdowns, and an overtime win. And then on the road in New England with the Patriots trying to solidify a bye week, four catches, 34 yards, and a crucial, crucial touchdown. That kind of typified how things went for you and the Miami Dolphins, both on the rise as the season ended there with the first-year head coach. And I know you have big expectations. I got to ask you, is Ryan Fitzpatrick as fun to play as it looks like on TV? Because whenever Fitzmagic pops up for the last, 10, 12, 15 years in the NFL, it always looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, man, he is an all-time teammate. He is... The dude's 38 years old, and you would think that this is his first or second year in the league with how loose he is out on the field, and just kind of how he conducts himself and how much fun he has out there playing. I think he deserves a lot of credit for the success that we were able to have as an organization that second half of the year. We finished the year 5-4. After an 0-7 start. So I think, we finally got clicking. I think he deserves a ton of credit. And, I know he deserves a ton of credit for, the success that I was having, that second half of the year as well. Cause there's a lot of times where, he just kind of put the ball up and let me go make a play. And, for that, I'll always be appreciative of him.
Mike, NFL.com lists you at 6'6", 250. If that's not accurate, let me know. But I remember quite the lanky Mike Gesicki dominating on the South Jersey sports scene. What was your height? Well, your height was probably about the same, but what was your weight, let's say, senior year of football?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I was still like probably 6'5", 6'6", but I was probably about 215, 220. And then when I got to Penn State, I initially played my freshman year probably like high 230s, maybe 240. And then I just continued to, just add on, more good weight, more, muscle and strength and that kind of stuff. And now I would say I consistently, this year I started training camp at like 253, and just kind of, it's hard to keep it on, playing down in Miami just because of the heat and the humidity and how much you're sweating. There's been practices out there where I've lost like 18 pounds in a 3-hour practice. You come back in, you drink about six waters and a couple of Pedialytes, and then you're all back and ready to go back at it the next day.
Wow. Just a few more minutes here with you, Mike, and appreciate all this time that you've given us here on the Lions 24/7 podcast. Looking back at yourself as a high schooler, now that you know a lot more about the game, how players progress, what is the scouting report on Southern Regional tight end who doesn't really play tight end yet, Mike Gesicki?
Yeah, he was definitely Southern Regional wide receiver, Mike Gesicki. I think, I was really just like raw as a football player. In terms of, route running and understanding of defenses and, just the game of football in general, like I said, I picked it up when I was in middle school, and I played quarterback until my sophomore year of high school. And then I switched over to receiver. And my first year was really just kind of run to a spot and, jump higher than the next guy to catch the ball. And then, between the end of that season till the beginning of the next, started to, learn more about the ins and outs of playing receiver and, the footwork and, how to, get yourself open and finding open spots. And just like, the absolute basics of, playing wide receiver that I didn't understand when I first started playing. And it's kind of funny to kind of see the success that I had with, you know, just kind of the raw, you know, athletic talent that, you know, I was really playing with. It's definitely, you know, a fun thing to look back on, and it was definitely, you know, a really fun experience.
When folks look back at the 2016 Big Ten championship run now, and when they look back at that 15, 20 years, they're going to remember you. They're going to remember Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley. Who are some names or a name on either side of the ball that you think it's important that Nittany Lions fans, no matter how far away they get from that exciting championship chase, that they need to make sure that those guys are getting their respect and proper due years later?
A guy that, you know, Penn State people just kind of, obviously, you know, they supported a ton when he was there and he had a ton of success, but just kind of flown on the radar because of his personality and how kind of low-key he was Chris Godwin. You know, he was never really, you know, he was never really big into, you know, media or social media or kind of getting involved with anything outside of just, you know, doing his job on Saturdays and making big plays. You know, so I think he was a, you know, obviously, you know, was a huge part of that team and, you know, that Big Ten championship run. And I mean, we played Michigan State and he had, you know, two really long touchdowns that kind of pushed us over the edge. You know, I think a lot of people forget about the Minnesota game the week before or 2 weeks before we beat Ohio State, that we won in overtime. And, you know, Tyler Davis kicked us into overtime on the last second field goal. So, I mean, there's just so many names, you know, obviously, you know, Saeed with his, you know, Big Ten championship game, you know, two touchdowns. There's so many names and, you know, the list kind of goes on and on and on about, you know, that team and, you know, the resiliency and, you know, how much talent was really on that team.
I asked you about your Dolphins quarterback from last year. I guess I have to ask you about your Penn State quarterback because he, you talk about breaking records. He broke a ton of them by the time he was done in Happy Valley. He showed a lot of determination the year after you left, dealing with an injury during the second half of the season. Trace McSorley, you mentioned ultimate teammate with Ryan Fitzpatrick. We're still waiting to see if Trace gets an opportunity in the NFL. It's not easy that he ends up playing behind the NFL MVP in year one, but in your opinion, what kind of a difference did he make in Penn State's trajectory as a program with what he did at that position?
I think it was a kind of the perfect storm for Trace. You know, Coach Moorhead comes in, and it's now, you know, Trace's job to win. And with that system, and you know how we kind of ran that offense with all the RPOs and the quarterback runs and the deep balls, it fit in perfectly for the way that he plays. And you know, Trace is just so gritty, so tough. And I think the thing that people always talk about is just, you know, his ability to win. And went all the way back to high school and then into college. You know, I think you can only count on, you know, one hand or, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, on how many games that Trace, you know, lost throughout his career at Penn State. So, you know, I know in, you know, the 2 years that I was there, I think it was, you know, I think we lost three games my junior year and then two my senior year. So, I mean, that he was, you know, super successful and a guy that kind of proved a lot of people wrong, you know, based off of the stereotypes of quarterbacks and, you know, how a quarterback should look in terms of, you know, height and size and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the thing they couldn't measure was, you know, his ability to make plays and, you know, his ability to win.
Yeah, two hands would be enough with McSorley. I think the number was 9 losses during his career at Penn State. And as we talked about before, 12 losses for Penn State in the previous 2 years, which a lot goes into that more than the quarterback spot, of course, but a difference maker. Mike, the last one for you. Where do I need to draft you in the fantasy draft? I'm already got to get the big board going. Where is the sweet spot for you this year, man? I need the insider trading.
You know, so many, you know, you'll be walking out to the field and, you know, I'll hear fans like yell to me, Mike, I got you on fantasy today. Like, need to, and it's so funny to kind of hear people, you know, talk about that and, you know, their fantasy leagues and, you know, how everything works and, you know, scoring points. And, you know, if you got a good game, people are, you know, tweeting at you, letting you know that, you know, you won them your game. Then, you know, if you had two catches and, you know, it wasn't enough for them, then they're letting you know that you're the reason they lost. And it's so funny. And it's definitely, you know, a very, you know, interactive, you know, part of the game in terms of fans, you know, kind of getting involved with the players and, you know, fantasy and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully I can continue to, you know, project upwards for anybody that's owning me in fantasy next year so I can get them a couple points.
Yeah, Mike was a sleeper last year, but I don't know. I think people woke up as the season went on. You're going to have to invest a pick in him a little bit earlier when the time comes. Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure, man. Excited to see what's next for you. Excited for where you've got to this point in your career and in your life. Enjoy South Jersey. Enjoy home a bit longer. And then when OTAs get going, best of luck with year three and with the Dolphins.
No doubt. Thanks, Tyler. Appreciate you having me on. And, you know, it's always fun, you know, talking to you and, you know, talking about Penn State and South Jersey and all that good stuff. So I appreciate you.
Come back anytime, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Well, in times of uncertainty, there is something to be said about hearing from an old friend. Glad we got to bring in Mike Gesicki for a conversation in this week of All Weeks. Sean Fitz will be back from vacation next week. We're going to hope the dust settles a bit. I can't promise anything in that regard, but bring a little bit more context and perspective on what Penn State faces as an athletic department, and more specifically, what's going to happen with Penn State football, whether it's the spring practice situation, the spring game, the recruiting world that has totally been paused as well. There is just so much to dig into, and we are at the very, very origins of what's going to presumably expand into a game changer here in 2020, hopefully not beyond. But for now, we're going to step aside. I want to again thank Mike Gesicki. Want to thank Mark Brennan again for joining us last week. The man drove out to Indianapolis this week and essentially had to turn right back around because Penn State wasn't playing basketball. So a big shout out to Mark for all of his coverage during a basketball season that reached great heights, didn't finish well, and then all of a sudden was poof, gone. We'll do our best to dissect things on lines247.com. You know we'll be back with another episode here on the podcast. For now, stay safe, enjoy yourself this weekend, and we'll talk to you really soon.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.